Rock and roll, I got Pete Vanderveen on season 3 of the Capital Razor Show, now brought to you by pitchdecks.com. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, dude. Welcome to the show, man. This is going to be exciting. All right, cool, man. So you are with Legacy Acquisitions, my team here. You have a special role that we're going to chat about here. But for the audience that doesn't know who you are, tell us how you got into multifamily investing, syndication, and partnering with Legacy Acquisitions.
Yeah, so I've got kind of a non-organic trajectory into multifamily. Actually, was after college, I founded several companies spanning real estate, fitness, energy. And one of the things I got into is I bought a 60-acre piece of land outside of a sprawling metropolis. And I was like, hey, I'm going to do land development. So I did all the entitlement, put in all the infrastructure, and the market tanked. And I went from around a $5 million asset to a $500,000 asset. And I was like, well, this did not work out well. So fast forward, I left my Fortune 5 executive leadership role and I decided I'm going to get into multifamily. So I went to multifamily school with me and my wife. And then I actually ended up running a mastermind for Christian entrepreneur, faith-based entrepreneurs for a year called Kingdom REI.
Yeah.
So I really helped grow that and facilitate that with my passion for real estate. And then since then, I've just been kind of doing more and more. And then obviously now joining Legacy Acquisitions, it's been a lot of fun just helping. For me, I find it's helpful to go back and I can say, listen, I've done single family. I've done a ton of industrial development. I've done tenant build outs nationwide for my franchising company. I've done land development, but I'll tell you what, multifamily is where it's at.
That's fantastic. We're going to have to explore this a little bit further. So first off, shout out to Ellis Hammond. Great dude. I hung out with him at Best Ever Conference a couple of years ago. Tell us, what did you do for the Kingdom REI company or organization?
Ellis is a great friend of mine. Love his heart, love his passion. And that's kind of where we started is when I left my Fortune 5 company, I was kind of looking for what was next. And I ended up seeing one of his podcasts where he was really speaking about his passion and his purpose. It was actually him and Caleb Williams on there. And it kind of just struck a chord in me. So I drove to San Diego and I met him and met in the front lobby. I was the first one there. And he's like, who are you and what are you doing here? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm here for the workshop today. So then we hit it off. And the whole time I was just trying to help him grow memberships, kind of grow the company, scale the company, really, really bring an exciting culture of servant leadership to the community where we could just really help bring people together in a collaborative fashion and then help people become more successful and then have greater kingdom impact through it all. So I was just there to kind of bring, obviously I've got $1 billion operational expertise, but for me, I was just trying to find ways of scaling it, optimizing it. And honestly, I spent the greater part of a year just trying to really bless on the people that were members and bring in new members and just help them feel like they're part of a bigger family.
Fascinating. All right. So probably is not so obvious that you have $1 billion institutional experience. Tell us, what do you mean by that? Like, who are the companies that you've worked with in the past?
I've built over a dozen companies of my own, but I most recently was upper management in a $1 billion company or in a multi-$1 billion operations for an energy provider, an energy major out of Houston. So I was overseeing around a $12 billion P&L that I had operational optimization investment into oversight of. So that was kind of my thing, is just scaling large teams. I had over 1,000 reports, millions of dollars per hour burn rate, getting things right. I did a lot of change management with them. I did a lot of optimization with them. I built, really tried to reformat the culture with them. So that's kind of what I do, is I really want to, I like to build companies by empowering people and then everything else works itself out in the end.
Okay, cool. And then Andy is a part of Kingdom REI and so is Derek Alexandrenko. I'm pretty sure, although I've not verified, that this is where they met and this is where you met Andy as well. And Derek, is that true?
Yeah, that's right.
Were you there when they met or when they started teaming up for the first time?
Can't tell you, because I met Andy the first time in San Diego. That's where Andy and I met and we hit it off right away. And Derek and I hit it off a few times after that. So I'm not sure exactly when they met.
Cool. And just for the world out there that doesn't know the infrastructure of Legacy Acquisitions and on the development side, we're actually partnered with Hammerhead Capital, which is Derek Alexandrenko and his partner, Chris Vontra. They do acquisitions and development of houses. They have a company called Hammerhead Capital. And then Andy, they needed a capital infusion. So Andy said, hey, well, let me look at your business model. It made sense for him. And then Next thing, Legacy Acquisitions is in the build-to-rent business. And it's been a pretty crazy ride, especially for me. When I came on board Legacy Acquisitions, I did not know anything about development other than some basic concepts, entitlements, and forced appreciation at every step along the way. But I didn't understand how much we could make, what the phases were, how this whole thing is built out. So it's been a fascinating ride. Let me ask you this. What made you want to come and help the organizational structure and the scaling of Legacy Acquisitions? What was attractive to you about partnering with Legacy Acquisitions?
Well, I think first and foremost, Andy's been a great guy, and anything Andy does, I know that it's going to be a great team because people are there for the right reasons and they've got the right initiative and the right founding principles. That meant a lot to me. I think the other part is that I'm a true integrator and Andy's a true visionary. So that was an ability for me to kind of partner up with someone that really complements my skill sets. So it felt like it was a good fit. And obviously, lastly, I typically geek out when it comes to building and scaling companies, and any opportunity to work with a great group of guys to be able to play a role into stepping away from the Kingdom REI and then stepping into Andy's team. It was like just leaving one family and stepping into another one because of the synergies between the two. It just seemed like a natural fit. And Andy and I really grew a friendship inside the Kingdom REI. So it was like, why not continue to do work outside the Kingdom REI?
Rock and roll. And Pete, I'm curious about one particular concept that I've been starting to talk about more and more on the show, which is the scaling of multifamily syndication companies. I think a lot of people that are becoming burgeoning capital raisers in the field, they're typically doing it through co-GP structures for their first time around. And at some point, they want to be a lot of times a full-blown GP. They want to potentially start their own fund, but they're not thinking a couple years in advance about the fact that they're going to be the head of an organization with employees and other partners underneath them, and they're going to have to manage them. And then that can start to become challenging, as Andy McMullen has found out. So he's been bringing on a lot of pieces, a lot of people to help with marketing, like, for example, me with exposure and automations and kind of the vision, helping with avatar creation, and to some extent, some organizational structure. But since you've come on board, it's been nights and day completely different. So can you talk to us about the organizational progress of Legacy Acquisitions? And then maybe we can chat about after that, what a company needs in order to scale themselves too.
I think for me that my general approach is I like to just stand and observe for a while just to see how things are functioning. I have these kind of cold eyes where I'm just looking for inefficiencies, or I'm looking for areas where there's maybe a disconnect of some sort. And typically within a scaling team, you've got, especially in real estate, you've got a lot of silo culture because we all start off as like ones and twos, just individuals that were doing flips or individuals that were raising capital. So it's really taking people that maybe naturally weren't in a team environment and then creating that team environment. So I think with Legacy Acquisitions, it was just helping take someone like Andy, who was doing his own thing, and him being a true visionary, he's not necessarily the guy that's in the trenches. So obviously in a situation like that, my goal is always to help empower him to be able to do his job better while taking the burden of the rest of the team off of his shoulders so that he can do what he does best, and then we can focus on the rest. But obviously then it was like making sure that all the core pieces are being covered. So you've got marketing, you've got ops, you've got systems and procedures, you've got capital raising, but making sure that all the pieces are tied together, and there's this kind of continuous API between everything so that there's continuity, and it's not just everyone scrambled to raise capital and then everyone scrambled to acquire the next property and then everyone scrambled to close documents. Like I think when we lack systems, you end up kind of just, it's like this herd mentality and everyone rushes over to do this job and then everyone rushes over to do that job. And it's ends up being kind of chaotic and a mess to clean up after the work.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. I've worked with other companies where they have a 6 or 7 person team that's all focused on operations and acquisitions, and me that's supposed to do all the capital raising, all the marketing, all the branding, all the acquiring of capital, all the let's get you into Syndication Pro, let's get you to verify your accreditation status, let's get you to all of this, and then communication and investor relations. And this is just like too much for one single person, I think, if you're really planning to scale. So it's kind of interesting that now I'm in a company where there's very little invested into the acquisitions of properties. We typically outsource that to other syndicators. And even in the build to rent space, we don't go out and find the property. We don't assess it. We don't know if it is the perfect piece of land or how to determine if it's the perfect piece of land and if the city's going to help us get through the finish line quickly. But our team members, particularly Chris Vaunch, they know that. So we trust them to do a piece. We stay in our lane. We focus on capital and then the operations of the fund, if we do that, or the co-GP structure and getting investors in and managing our own investors. But a lot of people that are scaling into capital raising as a co-GP, they're thinking, damn, I got to do all of this stuff myself. But they're not thinking, geez, maybe I'll have a team one day of like seven people that all focus on different little aspects and nuances of the capital raiser process. Why don't you break down the roles? Who's on the legacy acquisitions team? Let's pull the curtain back so that people can see our organization. Who do we have on our team and what are their roles? Let's talk about that for a second.
So I think what we've done well is we've really partnered up you and Andy to really lead the charge. You guys do a great job marketing. Your Rolodex is significant. And I think that's what obviously Hammerhead Capital really needed, that to really bring a powerful lever to pull in terms of the capital side of the equation. And then I think what we have going well for us at this point is we've got a strong team that really helps us span the business development. Obviously, we've got Tyler Wynette that's really helping. So he's really facilitating in all the back end, all the IT, the just making sure that all of our database systems are talking, and we've got continuity in our marketing. He's really involved with our newsletters that are going out. We've got a strong administrative support, Claren. And then we've got kind of our investor relations, which are primarily Robert Aguilar and then Keshav Kohler, right? Those two are really involved heavily with Robert, more so on the investor relations side. He picks up as soon as we've got a commitment from a soft to a hard commitment, then Robert really picks up the baton and does a great job providing white glove service. We really pride ourselves with treating people like family. So as soon as Robert gets you on the phone, we're going to give you the most beneficial, the most ease of use experience from A to Z, collecting all the documents, making sure that you're informed. And I think that's one of the things that we do well, is we try to make sure that we keep our investors incredibly engaged. We keep them incredibly informed, and we keep them knowing that they're top of mind for us. It's not like, thanks for your money, bye. Because I know guys like Dan Hanford really talk about investor donators, and we don't want to donate anyone to someone else because we did a bad job taking care of them. So I know we focus on that heavily. Robert takes care of the thank you gifts and the cards that go out after to the investors. And then Keshav is also heavily involved with really helping refine operations, just kind of the asset management with the team, Derek's team and such. And then I kind of help oversee all the operations so that I just make sure that everyone is supported and we're all operating as efficiently as possible. So I think that kind of sums up our team and all the pieces. I don't know if I missed any, but.
Yeah. So a couple of things. The other thing that you pointed out, which is very interesting, because I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about creating a new brand or creating a new syndication company, they're like, oh man, like I have to deal with automations and drip campaigns and making sure that Monday.com and Slack.com and ActiveCampaign and any other marketing system are all integrated. And if you're not techie, that's just like, that is a can of worms that you typically don't want to open. So we have Tyler helping with that, and also creating the webinars that we run, at least putting them together on Zoom. And then I'm the host of those. But he does a lot of the back end stuff that like would really drive me crazy. So really appreciate his help with that. Robert Aguilar is our investor relations guy. And then there's Claren, who's our virtual assistant and the glue of the entire company. But we've been recently incorporating a couple other people. I wanted to give a shout out to Chantel Room, who is helping Andy with his social media posting. And you have all these marketing pieces. You got me marketing a specific way, doing specific things on LinkedIn and other social media platforms. And then there's Andy, who's getting help from Chantel. Look, so how do you put all of this, get everybody on the same page on the marketing side? What's your take on that?
it's really easy for Andy to focus on his marketing and you to focus on your marketing, and everyone's doing their own thing. And eventually we all end up doing, you know, division of labor doesn't exist because we all do the same thing, but we do it all individually. So what we're trying to do is really bring all our puzzle pieces together so that we're doing things one time, and then we distribute it as in and amongst the team. So everyone has to do less work themselves, and then we end up becoming more efficient because we're creating our own framework, our own playbook for our marketing. So instead of relying on everyone getting their own impression of what works best, we want to create kind of a fit for purpose, a built to spec kind of a marketing platform for the team so that we're getting the most bang for our buck. We're not having to lift the same sandbag 10 times over. We pick it up, we produce content, we push it out, and there we start to get a better, we can also measure the metrics on the measurables to see how productive this stuff is, because when we're creating one stream of content, we can test it and we can keep split testing this stuff to see what's working, what's not working. Whereas if everyone's doing their own thing, you've got so many different variables and it's so hard to understand what's effective, what's not effective. Or if everyone's doing their own thing, how many hours are we all spending doing something that one person could do and then provide it to everyone? So I think that's a big game changer for us going forward.
All right. So we're taking all of these people and we're facing them in the same direction so that we all march going unanimously towards our goals. Talk to us a little bit about why or why not it may be important to have a designed avatar where the entire company knows who that person is. Let's start there because I want to dive into some behavioral stuff, like putting people through behavioral matrix and finding out what skills and what kind of personality types they have in order to help them be more successful. But before we go down there, talk to us a little bit about the getting everybody going in the same direction.
I think you really hit the nail on the head. There's when everyone is doing their own thing, no one's rowing in the same direction. No one's marching in the same direction. So we've got, if we're all rowing in separate directions, we're never going to get across the channel. Like we are never going to go anywhere. We're going to do circles. So we see such a waste of effort and energy. And if we're all trying to maximize, especially if we're trying to scale, we want to do as much with as little as possible because capital constraints and all these things that we're dealing with. So for us, if everyone's rowing in the same direction, we can maximize their momentum with as little investment as possible. So that's a critical piece, I think, for the team. I think it also creates a culture of collaboration, because if we know that we're all working to support each other rather than feeling like I'm exhausted doing my thing and how come you're not doing your thing, or maybe you're stepping on my lane and I'm stepping on your lane, or I feel like in a competitive environment together or against each other, none of that does us any good. So to really realize like, hey, we all have different roles to play, but we're all playing on the same team with the same endeavor to win the same championship, then we start to see efficiency show up. So to have everyone realizing like, we're all here to work together. I'm here to help you. You're here to help me. And that creates a culture, it creates collaboration, it creates communication. And we really cover all of our bases instead of having like all these dropped balls everywhere.
So we have a specific avatar. One of the things that we've done since you've come on board is we created a mission statement as a team and a vision statement. So talk to us about getting everybody to buy in or participate in the creation of these mission statements. How did you see our team do that? And why is that important for scaling capital raising organizations?
I think, like you said, to have the avatar, we really need to understand who we're speaking to. We need to understand who our investor is, because we don't want to be a jack of all trades and master of none. So I think having an avatar really helps us understand who is the person we're speaking to, what are his pain points, what keeps him up at night, what is his desires, what are his goals, what are his dreams, and how can we facilitate our solution to be part of his problem? And then how can we complement his lifestyle and his financial goals, his family's legacy? How can we really complement and be part of his life's legacy? And I think that's a big piece for us. So then to build on top of that, we really had to figure out like to service our avatar and to be the best version of our company, to bring the most value to the marketplace. How do we differentiate ourselves from every other capital raiser out there and every other asset management team out there? And I think that's where we really wanted to create a foundation of what sets us apart. How do we live our lives? And for us too, I think with our team and our team as a whole, it's really valuable to us that we practice what we preach. We are an extension of the business. So for us, what we do off the court is just as important as what we do on the court. And I think that's where when we created our mission, our vision, our values, it's all based on integrity, faith, family, elite service, extreme ownership, pursuit of excellence. But ultimately, we don't want to just smash and grab assets and then just have a high volume of money in, money out, and just a lot of volume. We want to have people that realize, like, we're here for you through thick and thin. We're here along the way. This is a journey, not a just get to the end point and then dine and dash. Like, we're here to create a community of people that are looking to create the biggest impact, but to enjoy the ride. And I think for us, with our customer service, our white glove approach, having all these clarified goals and principles, it allows us to really speak to our avatar, but also helps our avatar understand, like, we're here for you. We're family. We're going to be there every step of the way, and we're going to enjoy the journey because every day matters. It's not like we're just looking to get to the end zone and then it's all over.
Yeah. One of Andy's mottos, especially when we were spending a lot of time raising capital for other co-GPing with other syndicators, was not only do we want to work with the best syndicators that are good at what they do, but we want to work with syndicators who are doing good too. So I thought that was very cute and very fascinating, because it really exemplifies the fact that not only do we want to go and make money for our investors, but we want to bless the communities that we're a part of through apartment life and through other things, and creating an environment, a safe, functional, durable, excellent place where they can call it home and stay there for a long time. Because one of the biggest killers of making money is turnover. And if we can provide a place where people love to stay there, and they love the resident community and all the other amenities and things, then they end up staying there for 40 months. So their lives are blessed. And then that gets correlated to our investors making a lot of money. So it's a win-win for everybody. And we're stimulating the economy and having a 10x effect versus a single family dwelling kind of investor. We're actually doing 100 houses at a time, or investing in 200 unit kind of apartment complexes at one time. So I love that. So let's go back before I forget. We want to touch on this behavioral quadrant. I think we've done some personality assessments. Talk to us about, like, why does it make sense to do personality assessments within an organization? What have you seen from us in terms of doing that?
I think it plays a big part in just identifying, instead of making assumptions on who, what the team consists of, what the people's strengths and weaknesses are, what their tendencies are and what their tendencies are not. But it really allows us to put data behind assumptions. Because obviously, like, I would say that I can read people pretty quickly, but to see a personality assessment, it allows me to see even more on a numerical, on a quantitative level, what this person's like. But it allows us to really understand who we're working with. Because some people, there may be frustrations that arise because you're like, well, how come he's just not getting it? Well, it's like, maybe that's just not how they're, it's just not the way they're designed. That's not how that person functions. So I think it allows us to have more clarity as a team, but it also allows each individual person to get a bit of a self-assessment as to, sometimes it's good to see someone else's impression or see some score as to how you could articulate your strengths and weaknesses, but it gives you better self-awareness of what you're good at, what you're not good at. And I think for us, we want to constantly build our team around people where we obviously support each other where we're weakest, but we focus on where we're strong. So then our team can be collaborative in that fashion. We're not just allowing someone that's weak to just struggle or to have things dropped at that point. We want to make sure that we're covering and we've got, like, a continuity amongst the team.
Yeah. And we take scaling very seriously, as I'm sure a lot of syndicators do. One of the things that we did actually was we took this MBA group that Andy got in touch with, and we had them analyze 10 of our competitors. We gave them this scenario to kind of project, to create their project around, where they had $50,000 each, all six of the MBA students, and then they had to go and deploy this money into an investment within a 2-month time frame, because there was some kind of taxable event coming where they had to invest before the end of the year in order to get their taxes. And they had to talk to all of our competitors. And it was very interesting to see what made the person choose to invest, because they had to look at, do they resonate with them because they're of the same race, ethnicity, you know, sex? Do you invest with the woman investor because you're a woman, or a man because you're a man, or because you resonate with specific people because you're a doctor or you're an MBA and these people do that? There was visualizations. So, like, whether or not when you went to somebody's website, was there a video in motion? Obviously, how quickly somebody responded was one of the major factors. And what we determined after all this, because we're trying to become a better company ourselves, is that we actually are chosen over some of our competitors, which is crazy because some of them have like $100 billion or more of assets under management. And right now, we're just working on a couple of deals. We have probably that Timberwalk property and then also a portfolio that we're working with DeRosa, but we just own a very small fractional share of those properties. And then we're working on our building our portfolio of build to rent. We currently have 100 units in development, another 154 that we're building, and another 460 that are in the pipeline for down the road, which we all do through 506C. But if we can get to this point where we have like 750 units that are being built, that's just going to be the very beginning. And hopefully we can get to the point where we have blessed the communities of over 3,000 homes over maybe the next 10 years. So it's going to be a very fascinating ride. But these are things that a lot of people don't think about as you're a scaling syndicator, scaling developer, scaling whatever within the real estate space. Like you need organizational structure. You need some COO or somebody to kind of lead the charge, lead the direction, make sure that everybody's on the same page with the mission, with the values. And then you need to bring people that stay in their specific lane to do specific roles. So think about these things, guys, as you're scaling, because this is not a one-man mission where you're the capital raiser and you're the only one that's going to be doing this. And if you want to become a full-blown GP and run an organization, these are some of the things that you're going to need to start incorporating into your business. Anything else that you want to add to that?
No, you hit it out of the park there. You really covered it. And I think that's a critical piece is syndicators are, it's a challenge to go from an individualistic silo culture to a collaborative team culture. But when you can get it right, there's nothing but success with scalability and efficiencies that can show up. And then you can really do a lot with a relatively small lean team.
Fantastic. All right, man, let's dive into the lightning round. This is one of my favorite parts of the show. Let's start with this question. What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
Probably Argentina, Buenos Aires.
Wow, that sounds fun. All right, cool. Yeah. So favorite book of any kind?
Jocko Willink, Extreme Ownership.
Oh yeah, I think I've heard that a couple times recently. Yeah. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I preach that every day. I always say you got to be active, you got to be present, you got to be engaged, and you got to love yourself. And if you love yourself and you live in the moment, all you got to do is take one step, take another step, take another step. Limiting beliefs will disappear on their own.
Fantastic. How long do you want to live, Pete?
All my grandparents have died at 97 to 101. So I think I can be a centurion, right?
Awesome. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I'm a firm believer that success needs to be much more than financial KPIs. So success needs to be living your life to the fullest, living your best life, and then making a difference in the world. And financial success will show up.
All right. What do you love best about multifamily investing?
I like multifamily investing because it's got so many of the benefits. I was exposed to land development, which is highly capitalized. There is no hedging. Especially for someone like me, I've tried to bootstrap it. The thing I love about multifamily is you're not exposed to the market swings as we see now with S&P crashing and 401ks taking a hit. Multifamily has the longevity, it's got the stability, it's got the demand. Obviously, it's got the protection on, you know, investing through corporations, through non-recourse lending. It's just got all the protection mechanism, obviously capital depreciation, cost sag, all these things that are beneficial that you don't have the advantages of economies of scale. Those things are all advantageous to multifamily that I love, which I've experienced the hard way doing single family, doing land development. I didn't have any of those safety nets.
Wow, that's a great answer. How about this? Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
I think you want to have people, or you want to differentiate yourself with, comes down to why, not what. And I think that's for us. We want to raise capital through helping people see a greater vision to be part of something bigger than themselves. And then we realize we're here to do a bigger, we have more purpose than just raising money and investing and seeing an ROI. I think for us, the best way to raise capital is to bring people along in terms of a purpose-driven mission that we're going to do big things and create great legacy.
Fire. That was a killer answer. All right. How about this? What do you love best about being an outdoor enthusiast?
Man, life is beautiful. And obviously living in Arizona, we got summer and then we got everyone else's summer. And I love being outside. all the time, every day of the year. I love just getting my vitamin D and feeling them alive and breathing some fresh air. Nothing better.
All right, two more questions. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
I'd say no to the near-death. Miracles, I think life is a miracle.
Woo, every that's day, the answer. So. That's the answer. The fact that we're floating around on this blue bubble going around millions of miles an hour across a galaxy, which is just one small fraction of this entire universe, essentially floating around in empty space, experiencing consciousness, that is a miracle. So life itself, I love that answer. Life itself is a miracle. Love that. All right. So last question of the day brought to you by Shianna Amigo, one of our great listeners. She wants to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
One of the things I do spend a lot of my time on is helping men, primarily men. I help women as well, but I like to help men understand that their true calling, success, means that they're the ultimate father, husband, servant, leader. And if you do that right, your success will show up. But so many men I work with, all they look for is financial success, vocational success, and they're willing to bet the farm, they're willing to gamble it all to find success. And that leaves them broken, depressed, and empty. So if I can change the world by helping every man realize their superpower and live life to the fullest, I'll die a happy man.
That's fantastic. All right, love that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Racer Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions, my company, and our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Go to thecapitalracershow.com to see all our sponsors' deals. Pete, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
They can reach me. I'm on all the platforms at Pete Van Der Veen. You can check out my website, TriumphPerformanceAcademy.com. Or email me at Pete@TriumphPerformanceAcademy.com or Pete@LegacyAcquisitions.com.
Very cool. And then you have a webinar that you run on the second Friday of every month. Tell us, what is that all about?
Yeah, it comes back to my executive leadership and my coaching platform, where I host a webinar the second Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific of every month. And honestly, I would tell you that leadership in America is broken. True leaders are not leaders these days, and we seek success the wrong ways. Life is empty for a lot of executives and a lot of high net worth individuals. So what my platform is I really want to teach people how to do life right, how to do personal, professional, and how to build your company in a way that you create a holistic health within your corporation, where people aren't burning out and just burning the candle at both ends. So we really talk about leadership. We talk about empowerment. We talk about men's leadership, how to be the ultimate warrior and poet for your family, for your community, for your kids. That's what we talk about, because we want to leave this world a better place.
Fascinating stuff. So tell me, where did you learn about leadership? How did you get into this?
Honestly, I learned the hard way. I was an entrepreneur. I was hungry for success, but I was a wounded man that had gone through abuse, abandonment, neglect, and a lot of trauma growing up. And I thought finding financial success would fix it all. And then I started to realize that life doesn't work that way.
Wow.
My marriage started to fall apart. I was losing my kids. I was losing everything in pursuit of running billion-dollar companies. And then I started to watch all the guys around me that had lost everything, and they were retiring with a fat nest egg and nothing to show for it. And it just brought me to a place where I had to go through my own healing. But when I got there, I realized that so many men are lost. So many men don't have it figured out. So many men were stuck where I was stuck. No one was there for me when I was stuck. So now I have a passion to go back and help the next guy, to help him get it right. Because ultimately, we're all little boys that are stuck somewhere with hurt, with pain, with brokenness, with abandonment. And the world's telling us that if you're rich or if you find success, it fixes it all. And it's like, that's a Band-Aid, and it doesn't cover up the cancer that we have inside. But when you heal from the inside out, man, you can change the world. You can change your family. You can live your best life.
Wow. I'm so glad that I asked that question. All right, last question of the day. Do you have any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser and or scaling syndication company as they expand in their journey?
I think the one thing that I always try to get people to focus on is, don't try to go it alone. Like, be welcome support, welcome collaborative environments, welcome participation from others. I think in real estate, we can be very guarded at times. And I think the more you look to find people that would be able to synergize with what you're doing, because everyone wants to go start up a syndication business, raise money, buy assets, but I'm a big fan of why reinvent the wheel. Like, you're better off to come to work together with other people, because many hands lighten the load. And I think that's where, if you can collaborate with other people and you guys all bring a skill set to the table, you can scale faster, you can work less hard and be more efficient and achieve bigger objectives.
Dude, this has been fire, man. Really appreciate you coming on, sharing a little bit. It's been really fun pulling back the curtain on our organization. I hope that you guys, as you're thinking about growing, that you start contemplating some of these things that you're going to have to deal with as a scaling syndicator and capital raiser. And it's not a one-man job, guys. Like, we have an entire team and we're still just growing it. We're still babies in this. So if you can imagine what it would look like to have 150 employees, that's where we want to head, in that direction. So think about this, guys. And with that, we're going to let you go. Pete, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for joining us.